All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. My name is Brandon Hall. As always, I'm joined today by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty stellar, aside from the audio issue we are having today. Just a heads up for listeners, I'm not even going to go into it. I don't have my recording mic today, so if it's a little tinny and awful, apologies in advance, but we're just going to roll with it.
Yeah, this should be our Quill and Query motto, is just let's roll with it. All good. Well, we have some fun topics to talk about today, Ash. A lot of controversies in the world of books lately. We're definitely going to have some fun talking about some of those, but we also have some exciting podcast updates as well. So excited to talk about those. But before we get into all that, as always, we need to talk about what we are currently reading. So, Ash, tell us, what have you been reading? Because it's been a while since our last episode.
It has. It's been a few weeks. I am currently reading Femina by Janina Ramirez. It is a medieval history told from the perspective of a bunch of women that have kind of been forgotten. It's really good so far. I'm digging it. It's a little all over the place, but that's just because it's I'm reading the first couple chapters and it's establishing itself, but it's pretty fascinating so far. And then I'm also reading an advanced copy of The First Casualty by Kwame Skinner. And I can't tell if I like it yet. I'm about three chapters in. It's a lot of name dropping. I've learned a lot about my own writing in reading this so far, because it's very similar in style to what I'm doing. But I'm like, oh, this is what I shouldn't do, because I'm confused. As a reader, I'm confused as to what's going on. So both enjoyable. We'll see if I finish both. Who knows? What are you reading?
Yeah. Well, I have finished my copy of The Devils, and I absolutely loved it.
Nice.
Great book from Abercrombie, as always, in my opinion. And then just continuing down the Abercrombie, bibliography here, I finished A Little Hatred, which is the first book in Age of Madness, the sequel trilogy to First Law. I'm on the second book of that trilogy, which is The Trouble with Peace. Very early in it, though. I literally just finished A Little Hatred a couple days ago. So,
Look at us.
I have a feeling I'm going to like this one, because I like most of Abercrombie's stuff. And I feel like, five, six books into his works, I don't think I'm going to find one that I don't like, at least
where I am
right now. So,
just continuing with the. Okay. Sorry.
That's all good.
I know it's annoying. It's just because we don't have the right audio. If anyone wants to know what she was chewing on, it was an antler. Anyway,
continue. I'm so sorry. Nova loves those.
Yeah. But they're also so loud. So anyway. Apologies.
Yeah, I know. No worries. I was just saying, just continuing my, diving into the rest of Abercrombie's work that I haven't gotten to yet and thoroughly enjoying it. I've been trying to do a lot of that with my favorite authors, just kind of go through their books that I haven't read yet. Martin has a handful that I haven't gotten to, like some of his really early works that are glaring at me from the shelf over there. So hoping to get to those soon as well. But I'm actually really pleasantly surprised with how consistently good both of them have been. I feel like there's an expectation that there you can see the growth, and I think you can in some ways, but there's also a lot of areas where I'm like, oh, they were just always good at this. It's surprising. Especially some of Martin's stuff, because it's very early 70s 80s, so different landscape for sci-fi fantasy, but I still really enjoyed it.
Nice. Well, good. Look at us reading again.
I know. I feel like last year I read almost nothing after our first few episodes, and my reading updates were always the same. So I'm glad to have something different every now and then to say that I'm reading.
Yeah. I've been using this, this app called Opal. They could sponsor us if they wanted to. But it's it's a harder app limit blocker kind of thing. Your iPhone, if you put an app limit or whatever, you can just hit ignore. It's super easy to know. So my partner was using it, and then he showed me, and I've been using it, and it's drastically lowered my phone usage. So I've been just reading way more, because it's I don't know, I'm on a streak now and I don't want to lose my streak. And then you set like certain time frames to not have access to certain apps. So there are a bunch of others out there that are like that, but I like this one because it's pretty simple and it doesn't bug you with like ads and stuff like that. And if you want to take like a break or something like that, you have to hit break and it makes you do like a mini meditation moment. So you have to like breathe in and breathe out. Anyway, so I found that like being not on social media, so obvious, but it does help your artistic endeavors if you're limited. So yeah,
totally. Well, I think we talked about this in our recent in our last episode as well. I also put limits, not through that app, I'll definitely have to check that app out, but I put limits on my screen time on the apps that I found were consuming most of it. And I went off of some advice from a YouTube video that was kind of how you can shift your, you know, your natural habit from, for me, it was just always picking up my phone when I'm bored to picking up a book when you're bored. So like kind of just changing that behavior. And like you said, limiting that, the time spent scrolling and just being on your phone has been a tremendous help in boosting how many pages I'm actually reading and, you know, my enjoyment of the books and all of that. So if you are struggling with reading and you feel like your TBR is always growing and never getting smaller, maybe look at your screen time. Maybe put some limits on there. Maybe check out that app that Ash just, what it was called, Opal.
Opal. Yeah, you get little like gemstones. It's gamified, but they're not immediate. You have to like spend a few days kind of putting work in. And now I've noticed I've been using it for almost 30 days now, and I've definitely noticed instead of going for my phone, I'm going for my Kindle. So I've already shifted that kind of momentum. I'm every now and then I still look at my stuff, but anyway, it's a good one. I like these habit changers.
Yeah. I think it's all good in moderation too. What got me was just looking at the settings where it says how often or how many hours you were spending on these apps per week. And it's like, it's almost embarrassing to look at those numbers. But if you haven't looked at them, I encourage you to, because you might be shocked how often you are actually opening these apps.
It did this thing when you first started. It like took my iPhone like statistics or whatever, and then it added up how many years I would spend on my phone. Ooh. And that shocked the shit out of me. I was like, what? I'm not even going to admit to the number because it was so absolutely like gut-wrenching. Yeah. And I was like, oh, to just spend that many years in a row on a phone seems, I love the internet. I'm an old school, you know, girly pop from the early 2000s, but I was like, this is just not worth it. So yes, it is good to look at how much time you're spending and, you know, work on cutting it back. So anyway, that's our sponsored hour for these apps.
Yeah.
These apps.
Yeah. Hit us up, Opal. We'd love to work with you.
Yeah.
Sound like you can help many of our listeners with their TBRs. Yeah, so.
Definitely.
All right. Well, we have some exciting podcast updates. Ash, anyone who listens to our show knows we skipped our last episode. There was just a lot of behind the scenes stuff Ash and I wanted to work on, and kind of, you know, one of the things that we like to focus on with Cool and Queer is always bringing you a consistent level of quality with our episodes. Mm-hmm. And that includes not just repeating dead topics that we've already talked about. So we spent a lot of time on some back end stuff. We're working on securing more interviews. I think we already have like 4 lined up, with 2 of them scheduled and then 2 more we're still figuring out. But very exciting stuff on the guest front, because I know we had a lot of guests at the top half of the year, and then we kind of didn't really have that many in the middle of the year. So we're trying to find some guests to bring on for you guys. There'll be a returning face. I believe we have a narrator and a few other authors lined up. So yeah, exciting stuff. Look out for the new faces on Quill and Query. But other than that, I think, lives have moved over to YouTube. If you're watching us live, you'll know that now. If you're looking for us on TikTok, you probably haven't seen that news yet, but we are currently streaming all of our lives over on YouTube. It's just easier for Ash and I to have one screen to focus on, and I think it helps with my internet bandwidth too, so I'm not streaming on 2 fronts. But yeah, those are that's our exciting podcast updates. Was really more excited about like the guests, because I loved our interviews at the top half, and I'm excited to get back into those. And a few other community building things that I don't think we're quite ready to talk about yet, but some exciting stuff behind the scenes that hopefully we can share soon. If you haven't subscribed on YouTube, go do it, because it'll help us get closer to that.
If anyone has any suggestions for self-published authors that they really like, that they would love to hear from, go ahead and let us know. I think we've been getting a few more comments than we were used to over on TikTok, here on YouTube, kind of engaging more. So we really are loving that. And it's been fun to hear from more folks.
Yeah, super stoked about all the engagement. We get a lot of great input from you guys in the comments, and lots of clip views. You guys seem to love the clips over there. So
yeah,
we will definitely keep you inundated with those. Rip to your sub feeds though, because I upload those like every other day. So
that's all right.
All right. Well, we do have one audience question that I will highlight here, but I'm going to preface this by saying we actually put this as a full topic for later on in the episode, because I felt like it deserved its own kind of space for that. So JinZ147 on YouTube asked, I would like to know what your opinion is regarding battling stress while indulging in a creative pursuit. So I thought this kind of deserved a in-depth discussion because I have a lot to say on this one. So we will chat about this here shortly as we dive into the topics for the week. But I love to see the audience suggested topics. We haven't had one in a while, so it's really
cool. Haven't. No, it was great to see. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, perfect. And I'm sure you guys will have, well, hopefully more questions where we can either just answer quickly or put them into full segments. So yeah, if you have anything, even if it's a topic we've touched on and you want to hear more of, just let us know. So excited. Our first audience question in a minute.
Yeah. Very exciting. I don't have any indie releases to spotlight this week. I am going to try to do better about sourcing these. It's difficult because a lot of the ones that I get are for like later in the year, and I like to try and shout out your guys' releases like the week of or the month of, so I'm not highlighting someone's book that's coming out in November, because ultimately I don't think anyone's going to remember that if I shout it out right now. So but just saying that I will try to do better about sourcing some of these releases, because I do want to give you guys shout outs more often and find some more undiscovered indie books to spotlight.
For sure.
All right, Ash, that is going to do it for our podcast updates and everything else that we open the show with, because I am very
that's a long intro
brain today.
We got a lot of updates.
It was a long
intro. No, that's okay. That's okay. Sorry.
It was Sometimes longer than like our that. Usual, but
it is.
Cool. Well, we can dive into our weekly topics. This first one is going to be a deeply personal topic for me, because it involves my favorite author. So anyone who knows about Worldcon has probably seen this. There was a bit of controversy, a bit of drama over there in a fantasy authors panel. So basically at the panel, which had the likes of George R. R. Martin, Brandon Sanderson, I believe Robin Hobb, Ryan Cahill, and a few others were also there. So really cool panel full of young and old voices in the fantasy genre space. Great opportunity for, you know, audience members to come and ask questions and hear from their favorite authors. Unfortunately, someone decided to use that opportunity to be kind of disrespectful towards one of the authors, who, like I said, if you know me, it's my favorite author, George R. R. Martin. But basically a fan confronted him during this panel. It looks like it was near the end of the panel, thankfully. So I thought the panel got cut short because of this, but I think it was about time to end anyway, but still.
Yeah.
Basically what the fan said was that George was going to not be around much longer, and asked if he would allow Brandon Sanderson, who was also on this panel, I believe sitting across from him, if he would allow him to finish the series. And naturally the reaction from, you know, the authors and the audience was like a collective gasp, and everyone got up and the panel was over. It was really shocking to like watch just because I watched the video clip of it. I don't know if you were able to catch it on YouTube.
I did.
it's very awkward, and it's like, you know, I almost wonder what goes through someone's head, like, yeah, this is appropriate to ask. So I have a lot of thoughts on this, Ash, but when you saw this, what did you think, and how did you feel for the people in the audience and just the authors on this panel at this kind of level of disrespect, in my opinion?
Yeah, I get such bad secondhand embarrassment when it comes to stuff like this. So that was when I literally cringed, like actively. I was like, oh my gosh, who would ask a question like that? Look, I'm not G.R. Martin's biggest fan. I've read all the Song of Ice and Fire novels up until the ones that we're waiting on. So I understand the frustration. I feel the same about, what's his face? Patrick Rothfuss, who did the name of the, like, the Kingkiller Chronicles. He still has not finished his third book, and it's been like over 15 or something, like something ridiculous. So look, I understand people's frustrations. Especially when you see an author, again, we'll talk about this in a second. You see an author doing a lot of like maybe interviews or things like that, and the timeline in your brain is like, oh, they're all doing like the movies and the shows and all this additional stuff instead of working on this thing that they have almost, they've agreed upon, right? Like they've agreed to finish this out. Mm-hmm. It's frustrating. At the same time, one, not the time nor the place to ask that. And also how insulting to be like, you're going to die soon. So are you going to pass this off to someone else? Again, we'll get into the Stan culture later on with my follow-up question. But regardless of what you think of Martin, I think it was a completely unfair question to ask. It could have been asked in a much more delicate and sensitive way. He gets this question all the time, and I'm pretty sure I've heard him give the same answers of like, it's 75% done, I'm working on it, but like, you know, I've got other commitments and things like that. So it's a fine line as a fan. I do love the show, and I do love, you know, both shows. It's a fine line between, you know, being like, hey man, like you've written a worldwide phenomenon and people are waiting, you know, and we love your work so much, we want to continue to be a part of it. When do you anticipate it being finished? You know, and do you look for your fellow authors for help? You know, there's a way to ask it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, without being outright like, you're dying, you're whatever. Like, I just don't. I'm glad that the audience reacted the way that they did, which was like shock and awe, and that the panelists were extremely kind to Martin, and, you know, trying to kind of like back him up in whatever ways they could. It was the audacity. It's crazy.
I remember when I first watched the clip, it very, very much cringed at just the thought of being in that audience, like when that question was asked. Like you said, there's a million different ways you could have asked this more tactfully. One of those just being not to ask it at all. Cause if you were to ask me, you know, and I say I was at this panel and I get to go up and ask my favorite fantasy author of all time one question, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah.
I know he's answered this question a million times already. Him and Brandon have talked about this, and it's been a resounding no from both of them. You know, not only does Martin not want anyone else to touch the series, at least last he spoke about it, Brandon does not want to touch it either, because he doesn't feel that it's his, he doesn't think he would be the right fit for it. And I think both of those are totally acceptable answers. Like, until Martin decides he wants to pass it on to someone else, then that's, I mean, it's his world, it's his prerogative. So I think asking a question that's kind of been asked to death is not only a waste of your time at this panel, but also just kind of disrespectful, since they've already both said that, like, they've already answered this to death. So,
my theory is that this person wanted to ask it that way, and that they wanted the kind of viral moment, the shock value of it all, the attention, whoever asked it. I don't even know who, which is probably a good thing, but you know, I think it was on purpose to get a clippable moment, which, again,
yeah,
really? You're going to use that one time to insult somebody? Like, Why? Just send them a hate letter like everyone else does. Like,
yeah.
Find the P.O. box, send it to the publisher, like, send your hate mail. But it just seems like a waste of time and energy. And also, like, yeah, like, yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, and no, I just, like, trust me, I want A Song of Ice and Fire to be finished as much as anyone else.
Yeah.
They are my most anticipated books, and they, like, one of the only books I'm allowed to break my book buying ban for is if those ever get released,
yeah.
Because that is the sure. exception. But yeah, I think there's a way to ask this and a way to bring this topic up, and that was not it.
Time nor the place. Yeah, no. No, and it made me question, so my follow-up question to this was, like, when did stan culture start spinning out of control? Like, if you think that's to be the case, I think it's kind of, it's wild. It's truly like the wild, wild west out there when it comes to stan culture.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much, I mean, I know for a fact social media has influenced this. It 100% is not the same as it used to be back in the day. I mean, I wrote, like, I was such a huge fan of authors that I wrote them letters. Like, I wrote Anthony Bourdain a letter, you know?
Yeah.
And because that was back in the day when, like, you didn't really have any other option, right? You either, like, went to these big events and hoped for the best, or you wrote a letter, or, you know, you, like, sent them an email and never heard back. But I think with the influx of, like, TikTok and, like, these big, almost larger-than-life personalities, like, we bring her up a lot, but Sarah J. Maas is experiencing that a lot right now, where, like, she'll take a photo of something that she's working on, and, like, it won't be much, but people will be in there, like circling and theorizing and all this kind of stuff, and I'm like,
yeah,
I don't think I understand fandom anymore. I don't. I mean, I'm like an old school fandom kind of girl where it's like you got your fan fiction and you have your small group of friends that you talk to about it, either online or in person. You know, you go cosplay if you want. But like, I don't know, there seems to be this like new obsession and an almost like you owe me this parasocial relationship because you've changed my life, even though the author has no way. You know what I mean? Like, it's. I think it's personally gotten out of control in a way that I'm like, oh no, we've always had paparazzi. We've always had those crazy fans that go to like events and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But Jesus Christ, it just seems like it's way more intense recently. It's like people actually fighting and doxing each other over opinions they have on these authors and these works of fiction, not to diminish the fact that they're fiction. Cause you know, we've got the classics that change literature, but holy guacamole. Anyway, wow. Yeah. So yeah, I wanted to know what you thought about fandom culture and stan culture.
No, I totally relate to just feeling like I don't fit into fandom culture anymore. And part of that might just be getting older. But I think, like you said, it's just so needlessly toxic in a lot of ways. Like, and I think Martin has talked about this too, in that he's just completely stepped back from internet discourse surrounding his work, because if he engages with it, it seems like everybody hates what he writes, and you wouldn't know that knowing how, you know, how much money he's made off of his work. So
yeah, it's for sure.
I think, yeah, I don't know what it is about the internet. It just lends itself to that type of culture and that discourse, and it's not something I want to engage with. I've done a lot of removing negativity, like, from like my media and just how much negativity I take in on a daily basis, because I can only handle so much. And I find that it does affect my mood pretty significantly if I engage with it too much. And that includes like fandom interactions. Like if I'm in the A Song of Ice and Fire subreddit or Discord that I'm in, and it's like all just, I hate this show, or the books are never going to be done. It's like, I don't want to sit here and talk about that. Like, I want to talk about what I like about these things. And, you know, maybe we can have a discussion once in a while about, you know, the books have been taken a while, but I don't know. I just feel like it's, I'm not that negative of a person. So I can't relate to these things on the extent that some people let it affect them. It's almost like it's ruining their day-to-day life that A Song of Ice and Fire isn't done.
Right. It's and it does bring up, I will say, it brings up not their like intense loyalty and obsession, but it does bring up a really interesting question, and I think maybe that's included in this, but like, when should we hold authors accountable for kind of like the promises they make, you know, versus like allowing them the creative freedom? And I don't know the answer to this question. It's me just like spitballing this thing. But I genuinely am like, I think it's okay to hold authors accountable or almost be like, hey, like you do have a group of people who are really invested in your art and your work. And each year the date gets pushed back, and it's, you know, I think there's something to be said about loyalty in terms of how long are you willing to wait for something. Of course, you want it to be as perfect as possible, and you know, that's also a statement. But you know, I'll take it back to Patrick Rothfuss. Like, I really loved The Kingkiller. Like, I loved those books, the two, and I was so excited. And you know, anytime he's asked, he's like, "Oh, it's I'm still working on it. I'm still working on it." And I'm just kind of like, okay, that's fine. But he's like republishing short stories and things like that. And you do wonder, like, is this, I put the time and effort into reading this and being a fan. So yeah, like I do kind of expect some consistency from my authors, but yeah, at the same time, do they owe us anything? Who's, I don't know. It's a hard line, especially when you're such like a big public figure. You know what I mean?
Yeah, agreed. I think I put this as our hot topic actually, that like how much do fan or do authors owe the fans in different
Oh yeah, we
regards
can,
as well. So we can dive into that a
we can
little
talk about that.
near the end, but let's see, we got a comment from Mandy here. It's tough too, especially if the author is making lots of stuff. You want them to do their main big work, but also they're coming out with more cool stuff. Complicated relationship with George Martin. Yeah, so that's the thing too, is like I feel like you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't with some of these things. Because when he pulled out of the show to focus on Winds of Winter, it seems like a lot of people also criticized him for not writing, not, you know, not being too involved with the show, and the show kind of falling off a little near the end, which also was partly due to the books not being finished. It's kind of a, you know, like a catch 22 there. It's what came first. But like, yeah, it feels like no matter what you do, to some degree, unless the book is out, you're going to get criticism.
For sure.
No
And
matter
I
what you're
think
working
he's
on.
a super unique, like, you know, Leigh Bardugo, her series when it got made into the Netflix series was already complete, right? So it was like people weren't expecting anything. He's a really unique situation because he's one of those rare cases where the book series isn't finished, but the show was in motion, and you know, and then now he's got the House of the Dragon. So it is really, I feel for him. That's a lot to juggle. And yeah, like you said, like people are just gonna hate it regardless, just because he's taken so long. Personally, I don't want to have to go back and reread all of them, so I will be doing YouTube brief synopsis videos, like listening to this. But yeah, it's hard. It's a fine balance. Yeah, we'll get into the how much do authors owe us later for sure, because I think it's an interesting topic.
I do plan on rereading A Song of Ice and Fire, but I have been holding off just because I don't want to reread it and then need to reread it a second time when if
Yeah,
Winds comes
gotta
out, you know?
wait for
So
the
it's like
official.
I gotta wait for the announcement of Winds and then I'll read it. I'm
No,
just, I'm trying
totally.
to hold off there, but yeah.
I get it.
All right, well, in other bookish controversy, we have the Audible situation. Now, I am going to link to this in our video description when it goes up on YouTube, because there's a lot of math here that I am not in the right mental state to try and break down for you
Have
guys.
no clue.
I will inevitably get something with the royalty split wrong, and I'd rather not put out misinformation or misspeak on this. So, I'm just going to kind of give the overall summary, and then I'll link to the petition in the description of the YouTube video, which has all the details from people who are more what's the word I'm looking for, you know, more informed on this topic than I. So, but the gist of the situation is that authors are not happy with the latest update to the Audible royalty splits. Like I said, there's a lot that goes into these new models, but overall, the general feedback has not been good from authors, from readers. It doesn't really seem like anybody's happy. So I kind of wanted to take a moment to talk about, one, Audible's like dominance in the audiobook space, because I feel like every week there's like a smaller competitor that I inevitably never hear about again. Like it just seems like Audible has such a stranglehold on the audiobook market. And so I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, one, if you have any thoughts on like the new royalty split, but also just how it seems like no one's ever quite happy with Audible. We just kind of tolerate that they're the dominant audiobook market at the moment. What are your thoughts on the whole situation?
Yeah, I'm really not a huge fan. I don't know. I don't feel like I have a lot of say here conceptually, just because I'm not an audiobook person. But I will say, I feel like it's always a way, like, no matter what product they put out, there's some way that Amazon is going to try and swindle artists or whatever out of their work. Like, their lack of care for AI slop, you know, that's already on Kindle, etc., whatever. Like, they just don't really care. It's just like a model for them to make money. And look, I understand, like, I have a Kindle, so I can't really say shit. And I do use Amazon if I really can't find anything local in my store. So I understand the appeal. And I think I said this in my follow-up, just being like, I think people are so used to having things instantly that, and cheaply, that Audible is the cheapest and quickest way for them to get what they want. And so they're not going to wait for their Libby or, you know, audiobook holds, especially if it takes a couple weeks. They're not going to want to pay the full audiobook price, you know, if they can get it with their, you know, monthly subscription, which the subscription model itself has just like become so asinine. I got another email today that like Apple was like upping its prices. So it's just like, I think consumers are tired on one hand of having to only use these like very specific, like big conglomerates for their content, but also they're not willing to kind of, and that's not true. I'm sure they're willing to support smaller, but I just don't see as much of a move to be like, hey, there's a really good alternative here, and here's what it is. But again, I'm not in the Audible space or the audiobook space, so maybe there is, and I just don't know. But yeah, I agree. We do need a, like, we need a new platform for this kind of stuff, or just really push people to slow down and be like, just wait for your Libby hold. Like, just, you know, this constant need for consumption and to always be ahead and to listen to things at 2.5 speed that you can get through it or whatever. It's just like, oh guys, like I thought the point of reading or listening was to enjoy and absorb rather than like feel like we have to rush on to the next biggest best thing. So I'm not surprised. Not surprised this is happening. I hope there is a better way to pay artists in the future because they put in a lot of work. I mean it's hundreds and hundreds of hours, you know.
Yeah, totally. You bring up great points about like the overconsumption mindset and the instant gratification. And that's something I've been kind of trying to move away from, especially like on the overconsumption side, just because it feels like when, you know, once the paycheck hits, there's a million companies that want it, you know, buy this new book, buy this new audiobook, buy this new, you know, pay for our new streaming service, all of those things.
Yeah, and right.
It's like, I feel like I've started paying for things that I don't even use at this point. So definitely trying to slow down there, but I feel like it is really difficult to put that genie back in the bottle, you know, with the instant gratification. Like, well, I'm so used to buying the audiobooks right away and getting them right away that it's hard for people to adjust, for sure. And I think Amazon knows that, which is, you know, why they throw their weight around with Audible so much. It's just really disappointing to see that, you know, after, because I believe it was a couple years ago where Brandon Sanderson tried to work with them to get better royalties for authors. And it looks like they're kind of backtracking.
Yeah.
Looks like they're kind of backtracking on it.
Sorry for my dog in the background.
Oh, it's all good.
There's a squirrel in the backyard.
We got a comment from Mandy. It's very clickbaity. People want to show how much they own and books got dragged into it. Yeah, that's, I feel like that's very prevalent on like book talk, is look at how many books are on my shelf and all of those things, but it, then, you know, how many of those have you read? Same with the audiobooks, like how many are in your library versus how many have you read? But yeah, it's just, it's really disappointing to see Audible continuously kind of screw authors with the royalties. You know, it'd be nice to, it would be nice to see a platform do well that also, you know, prioritizes authors. But I worry that we're so far down, like, into the hole with Audible and people having so many books in their libraries and they're just so used to it that it's really difficult for another platform to compete with, like, the level of accessibility and the features and all of that. So,
yeah, and I think it's interesting because all of those things, but at the same time, like, the average listener, like my mom, she doesn't read, she only listens, and she listens when she cleans or is doing chores on the farm or things like that. And really, really, come here with me. God, this is the episode of chaos and interruption. So sorry. Leave it, Mira.
Mira is our guest for this episode. It's all good.
I guess so. She's going to probably cry because I now have her ball. What else is she going to bring me this
episode? I have that same ball for Nova.
How do you have two? I'm not making this up, guys. There's another one that she literally just brought. Sit down. Sorry, you'll have to cut this out of the actual full episode. Lay down.
I'll just name this segment Mira. Yeah.
Mira's interruptions. So what I was saying was my mom is a huge Audible listener. It's how she consumes her literature. And I think that's great, especially for people who are really busy, but want to, you know, continue to read. But she's like an average listener, right? That's how she consumes. And so I don't think most people who are average consumers, not in the writer or narrator space or the indie publishing space, self-publishing, would be aware of this at all, right? It might be a blip on their Fox News, New York Times thing, but it's not going to stick with them because they're not in like this kind of subculture. So I wonder how much of it is like a lack of visibility to the issue. And I wonder if it was such a prominent, like if there was a disclaimer, you know, if more authors kind of like went on strike against Amazon or Audible, how much traction would that get? And if that would push Amazon to change its model, because then the average listener would be like, what do you mean you're not paying your authors this? What? You make money off of their book. Like, how does this make any sense? So I also wonder if it were more prominent of an issue, if more attention would be paid. So.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think in like the online communities that I'm in, the readers very much do seem to care. But once you get out of that space, like you said, it's not only do they not know, but I also wonder, would they care? And I don't mean that in like a negative way, but it's almost like, well, this affects the author, it doesn't affect me. And so... You know, how much does the consumer actually want to change for that? But yeah, it's Mandy makes good
points. Yeah,
it's
true.
Like trying to boycott Walmart. It's like they're
too
big to fail in some ways. Yeah. But you do mention a good alternative, Mandy, with Kobo. I haven't used Kobo much, but I do know a lot of it's very popular like internationally. So I'll definitely have to check it out more. Mandy, in the chat, can you do does Kobo offer audiobooks or are they just ebooks at the moment? Because I think when I first heard about them, they were only like ebooks, but I might be mistaken in that just because I don't use them really. So
yeah, we'll have to look into that. And who owns them? Do we know who owns them? I'm always curious too. Like,
yeah,
what's the big? Yeah, we're just in late stage capitalism, so all these like big monopolies have just such a chokehold on literally everything.
Yeah. It's... A little depressing to think about sometimes, but we try. Mandy says, I think just ebooks. Okay. Good alternative to like Kindle at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, and I think we can switch up. Oh, Libby. Sorry. Yeah.
Libby's a good one. Yeah. Just Libby. I keep pushing Libby, but I really mean it. I think it's like, it's so great. Especially if you're like an exclusive Kindle user, you just download your ebook from your library. So anyway. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think we can move over into our audience suggested topic for the week. You lied. They do have audiobooks. Okay. Very cool. So if you are looking for an Audible alternative, check out Kobo. But yeah, like I said, we can move over to our audience suggested topic for this episode, and that is going to be how we battle stress while indulging in a creative pursuit. Something I think you and I can both relate to very much over the past 2 years or so.
Yeah,
this is a great question.
It is.
And I have a lot of things that I feel like I've learned and I'm still learning just as we've mm-hmm. been doing the podcast and as we've been writing and when we did Blades for Hire, just so many things that, you know, are like high stress, but also very creative endeavors and just trying to balance the two. So before I get into all of the, can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I hit the microphone because I moved my hands too much.
Okay, we're and messed I thought today. I hit the mute
button. Yeah. Okay, really. Cool. Yeah, but it just let's dive back into that, Ash. What? How do you, just from a high level, I guess, how do you balance, you know, having a stressful life with all of these creative pursuits, like the podcast and writing A Filthy Hunger and all of these things?
Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's been such a harrowing but also fantastic learning experience. Starting, I think I officially told everyone I was going to do this in 2023, I think, mm-hmm. something like that. Or it kind of started in 2022 and just was lazy half the time and didn't really care. But, you know, I think it's really important for people to really sit with themselves in whatever way that is and mm-hmm. figure out what the actual stressor is. Is the stressor work? You know, and if so, that's unfortunately not something you can get rid of, right? Like, you can't, unless you really are going to say screw it. But, mm-hmm. you know, if work is hard, then you understand that that's where that stressor comes from. Is mm-hmm. it being too busy? That's something you can change too, right? Like, maybe you say no to a friend outing. That's my issue, is I'm way too, so I just agreed to start a D&D campaign up again. Yeah. Every Thursday, and I like was sitting there and I was like, girl, are you sure you should do this? But I also love it, right? Like, that's how I refuel, is by being with my friends. So it's learning where the major stressors are coming from, and are these actionable things you can take action on? I know that sounds redundant, but can you do something about it? Sometimes things happen and then they're out of your control and you just have to take it. And maybe that means you pause your artistic endeavors for a while until you feel more balanced. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I think I cause myself stress because I don't structure my writing process well. So am I stressed about my book because I'm not making any headway on it? Who's to blame for that? Me. Okay. Yeah. So what do I need to do? Mm-hmm. That's very grandiose, kind of, we're looking at 30,000 feet up in the air. More granular, scream into the void is something I definitely do. But I also like just talk to people about it. I talk to my partner about it. I talk to my friends about it. My brother, especially, I'll just say, hey, I'm frustrated here. I'm stressed here. Oftentimes I just need a break. I need to be alone for a while. I need a weekend by myself, quiet. Mm-hmm. Some of you probably don't drink, but a glass of wine every now and then doesn't hurt either for me when I'm like trying to get myself rammed up. I'm like, okay, ooh, mm-hmm. nice glass of wine, light the candles, things like that. So this is kind of rambly, but it's hard and it's going to be stressful and it will always be stressful. I think the person who asked this question was awesome to ask it. I wanted to pick up on a word too. Mm-hmm. They used regarding battling stress while indulging in a creative pursuit. So I find the word indulging to be really interesting. I mm-hmm. think if you are learning a new skill, that might seem like an indulging pursuit, right? Like, oh, you don't need to. But I think you have to ask yourself, if something like writing, a thing that you are indulging your creativity in, or is it a necessity? For me, it's a necessity. I have to do this. This is something I love. I'm passionate about. I want to do it for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
It is a part of me, body and soul. So I think it's important to ask yourself that question too. If it's an indulgence, then it's one of those things where, okay, well then real life does have to come first, you know? And if things are stressful in real life, can this creative pursuit be relaxing, And if it's not relaxing for you, maybe now's not the best time. So anyway, that was a really, really long answer to the question. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but no, yeah.
I think that's great. I think there's a lot of great points that I can relate to. Like, I'm a very solution focused person. So I do a lot of what you said where, okay, I'm stressed. What am I stressed about and what can I do about it? Like, what's actually causing me to feel this way and how can I fix it? Because I can sit here and be miserable all I want. It's not going to fix the situation. And I'm just not someone who likes to sit in that anymore. It's just not for me.
Sure.
Like, I'm a very action-oriented person now. So, yeah, for me, I find that a lot of my stress is external. It's either, like, financial reasons or work-related reasons or, you know, nothing really related to the creativity. It's more like I'm so stressed that I feel like I can't engage with this. With, like, my writing too much.
Bandwidth.
And sometimes, bandwidth. That's the word I was looking for. So I think you made a point about, like, maybe just some days you just don't make much progress or you don't indulge in the creativity. And I think that's been very true for me on a lot of, like, my really stressful, like, work weeks. Sometimes I just don't get writing done. And it's because I don't feel like I'm at my best, and I feel like I'm not enjoying writing in that moment. And so sometimes for me, the balance is I'm 90% focused on work right now. I don't want to give my writing 10%. I want to give it, you know, 100%, and I just can't do that right now. So sometimes it's that, like, a lot of people will say you got to write every day or, you know, consistently. And I feel like I don't really have a good schedule or structure yet. So I'm still working on my process.
Same.
But definitely have learned that I tend to take on too much, like, too many projects. I've been trying to, you know, I think you said for you, it's like social stuff. Like, you say yes to everything on that front. For me, anything that's like a new creative pursuit, I'm like, yeah, I want to do that. I've had to learn to tell myself no in a lot of that too, where, like,
yeah, exactly.
No, I already have too many creative projects I'm working on. Like, I need to finish this book first. Then maybe we can get to that other stuff. It's hard to give, like, a good piece of advice here because I feel like it's so individual for how you manage, you know, your stress while trying to write or do something creative.
I found a theme. No, that's same. I mean, I think the theme we've both touched on though is kind of self-reflection. I think a lot of people feel that stress is not something that they can, like, handle or wrangle. And in some cases it's true. I mean, some cases things are so beyond your control that it really is genuinely just stressful and you're just surviving. I think it is just maybe first step is, like we both said, like, what's a solution? Is there something that I can solve here that is within my control? Uh-huh. And if it is, great. And if not, maybe just recognizing that it's not, and that maybe it's just not the time to be creative, or know that your creativity can be a really safe, nice space to fall to get away from that stress. Uh-huh. So yeah, I think self-reflection there is the biggest take, and, like, action. It's like, what action do you or do you not need to take, you know, going forward. So yeah, it's a great question though. I think, you know, some people get stoned, some people drink, some people do both, some people go run and exercise and feel great. It really is kind of, it's both. The clear thing for me is that you're going to be stressed throughout the process. Like, there's no way to get around it. So, like, get comfortable being uncomfortable, you know, like, you really got to be honest with yourself and just be like, look, like, did I have a hard day? Yes. Do you have enough energy to write two sentences? Which has kind of been my recent last couple weeks. Like, MO is like, I whip out my book instead of my laptop because I stare at a screen all day. And I get on my laptop and I take my pen or my notebook and I just write a sentence. And then usually that triggers, I'm like, oh, I have found so many plot holes in the last 2 weeks. It's unreal.
Yeah.
Simply because I sit on my couch, I light a candle and I just start scribbling. And I'm like, oh my God, I freaking can't believe I didn't even think about this. So I don't know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. Anyway, that's enough rambling for me.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I think I don't know where I was going to go with that. We're going to end on your note because I'm getting very
cool. Perfect.
Getting a lot of brain fog over here, and I don't want to mess up
the
points we made on that topic. But I hope we answered your question, Jinzi, on YouTube.
I hope so too. It was a great one. I don't know if we did. I'm sure we sound absolutely stupid. So hopefully it's helpful. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, it's one of those Tuesdays. Well, we have one more kind of depressing topic to get into here. It's
we do. So
this one comes from Mark Lawrence, who is a pretty prolific fantasy author, but I also feel like kind of obscure in some ways. So I don't know if how familiar everyone is with him, but I have a bunch of his books on my shelf. He's written Book of the Ancestor and a few other fantasy series. But he recently ran kind of a small experiment where he showed readers, writing by groups of fantasy authors. This was all flash fiction, by the way, so very short. But by him, Robin Hobb, a few other fantasy authors, and then an AI written piece, and didn't tell them which was which, and had them pick their favorites. And unfortunately, in more than half of the selections, the readers ended up going with the AI written work. Now, a few notes on this one. It is flash fiction, which is, again, I don't think AI is good at writing anything, but if you were going to write something with AI, flash fiction is what you're going to write with it, because it's not good at longer pieces. It forgets things. It's not very cohesive. So flash fiction is why they ran this way, because it's where it's strongest. I say not thinking is strong, but you know what I'm getting at. But yeah, it was a limited experiment. It's not, don't take this as fact that readers would prefer AI written work over human created stuff. But it's just, I think it goes to show why authors are so concerned about the prevalence of AI in creative spaces, because there is a certain point and a certain, demographic that cannot tell the difference and also might not care. And so that, I think, is what is most concerning. So what did you think when you saw this little experiment in our doc over here? Like, did you feel very doom and gloom, or are you like, yeah, but it's kind of a very limited experiment? Like, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think it was an interesting experiment to kind of start the dialogue about what AI is capable of in the literary world. Because it's such a limited experience and it is flash fiction, I don't know how much, I don't think I spiraled. I didn't spiral. I wasn't really surprised, just because AI can be known, especially with programming used to for the shorter stuff, really pull some good stuff out. It's funny though, because I'm wondering how much of that AI was trained on their own pirated books. you know what I mean? Truly, imagine if you're pulling from sources from thousands and thousands and whatever, whatever the number is of books and fan fiction, because I just read something that Meta trained their AI off of fan fiction as well, that it's one person writing flash fiction based off of their one limited experience of being a person in the world, interacting with the world, regardless of what they write. And then you're looking at something that is pulling from artists and writers, including probably the ones that are also participating, in their stuff. So truly, if the pool is bigger, the potential to be better is just there. So I'm not surprised this happened. I don't think it's very fair in terms of I don't know what additional parameters. I'm sure if you had actual folks who ran these types of experiments over and over and over again, it might be different. But yeah, I'm not super concerned. I've read some stuff written by AI and I'm like, damn, that's really good, But again, it's the principle. And I think people who are willing to engage in this experiment and read AI stuff, even though they might not know what's AI or not, have a very different, potentially they're pro AI or not as anti AI as some people are. Because it just makes me think of when that woman had her AI prompt in her book recently, and then people were like, what? And as soon as people found out, they were like, now we have to worry if there's AI in our books. So I don't know. I think there's too much. There are too many parameters here to get super concerned.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting look at how it could potentially evolve. I don't think it's that concerning at the moment or that surprising, like you said.
Sure.
Especially with it being flash fiction, like that's where it's going to beat human authors if it is in any space. So.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I didn't really get too down about it. It was just an interesting new story. I don't really have a whole lot to say about it other than like I hope readers continue to push back against AI. I hope they continue, you know, to be vigilant and not going down the path of like witch hunting where we've talked about that before and, you know, making accusations of AI where they're not warranted, but just making it clear that that's not what you want to read. Because I think that's the best you can do for authors at the moment. And you know, I know that's very much true for me as a reader. I don't really have any interest in reading anything written by AI. So.
No, me neither. And it's interesting though. I just watched like a YouTube deep dive. I can't remember the title of the video, but it was essentially discussing there are new religious AI cults popping up that people are like, they think they can jailbreak their AI and like give it consciousness. And that when they're talking to them, it's, you know, it's actually AI talking to them, not just like, all the things behind it that it was trained on. And I do wonder, I think we're just gonna, we had actually someone comment on a video on one of our reels, I think, or shorts. And they made really good points about like a lot of people misunderstand AI and like how AI is used or trained and that like it's based off of like what we do with it. Like it inherently itself is not bad. And I was like, that's a really good point. I think it's nice to have like someone who, and he, or they, I don't know, gender, you know, like I've worked in this kind of field for a while and people have a lot of misconceptions. I think that's true. On one hand, I think a lot of people are correct in being afraid, but I do think fear mongering has been a thing and it's pushing people away from truly understanding and wanting to learn about it. Yeah. But on the other hand, I think people who work with it are also very like attached to it or like understand it in a much different way than like maybe artists think about it and how it's trained and things like that. So, I mean, it's interesting. Oh my gosh. My book was given funding by one of those cults. We have to ask more about that at a later time because that's insane. I don't want to derail the combo, but I need some elaboration there. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I think it's still so new that we're getting our bearings and I'm working on not being so alarmist and so reactive. So when it comes to the AI stuff, I think I have my feelings, but I also understand that it's just kind of it's a new thing and we have to figure it out collectively.
The like super, what's the word I'm looking for? These very niche fringe groups that you mentioned that are like these people who think they can give their AI consciousness or like these groups on, I don't know if you've seen the My Therapist is AI or My Boyfriend is AI Reddits or whatever. They're like, it's very interesting
how some of these people are.
I don't know where some of these people come from, but
it's also, I think it's just at its core, it's sad to me because I feel like the root cause of this is just wanting human connection and not being able to find it in real life easily.
Yeah, totally.
Again, I'll go back to like our instant, you know, we have everything instantly all the time. You can go puff something to your door immediately kind of world now, but it's like, we are social creatures. And when you remove that, I think COVID did a number on a lot of people, you know, in terms of just kind of like that isolation and a lot of people aren't happy in their works or they're working from home, which can be a really great thing, speaking of personal experience. But that's also why I'm so social, because I'm like, I got to get out of the house. I got to go do something. So yeah, there are tons of caveats as to why people might go to AI for human connection or for some type of connection, but I think it's just a lack of real life in-person communication and relatability. So yeah, I feel for those people. I really do. I think it's funny to a certain extent, but it's also kind of sad. And I'm like, that's why people read books, right? To like get taken out of their normalcy and to like go on these wild, amazing adventures and things like that. But now it's just, yeah, now it's just a chat bot. So, yeah. Yeah. And I think, Mandy says, you know, so yeah, wanting someone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can go ahead, Brandon. Some recognition. You can read it if you'd like. Oh, yeah. Just Mandy's comment was maybe human connection, but also wanting someone to give lots of recognition to your struggles. Yeah, I think that's another good point is that AI is always, like when you talk to it, it's supposed to be a positive experience. It's recognizing your struggles and what you're you know, putting into your prompts. So I think that resonates with a lot of people who don't have someone they can do that with in their day-to-day life.
Agreed. Chong Snow is on his own. That's funny.
There's a lot of people in A Song of Ice and Fire who maybe shouldn't get access to ChatGPT.
Agree.
All right. Well, I think we have one hot topic to get into, Ash, before we get ready to close out the episode. And that's going to circle back to our earlier conversation about George Martin. So great job bringing him up again, Mandy, with Jon Snow. So, our hot topic is, to what extent do authors owe readers progress updates, new books, really anything? You know, what I guess I wanted to talk about where we both feel kind of that line is, because we talked about where, you know, the social interaction kind of line is with these conventions and stuff, but we didn't get into like the second half of that, which is, what does the author actually owe the reader? And, you know, I guess you can take that even further, like, what does the creator owe their audience? I guess I'll let you take this one off. What, or if you want, I can go. This is an interesting one.
It's just messy.
It is a messy one for sure. I feel like I've talked about this one in so many like different Discords, because I'm in like three different A Song of Ice and Fire Discords. So I've had this conversation. So I feel like I know what I feel about it. Pretty well, but.
Yeah. I mean, you can go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So it's interesting, right? Because when it comes to like a series, when you put out a book and you say, this is the start of a series, you're ultimately making a promise to the reader that I'm going to finish this series at some point. You're going to get a complete story from start to finish, you know, barring any completely unforeseeable circumstances, like, you know, an accident or a health scare or anything like that. Like, ultimately, as long as it's in my power, I'm going to try and finish this series. And so I think most authors, I think it's fair to say, mean that when they set out to write a series. I don't think anyone's really coming out starting a series with the intent not to finish it. You know, maybe there's a few outlying examples of that, but none that I've personally felt with any of the authors that I've read. And so I think from that perspective, you do owe your readers that, like, you do owe them the completed series in the sense of, you made that promise, so you at least need to try and fulfill it. Now, with that said, I don't think that means at any cost, and I do think there are certain caveats to that where an author maybe doesn't have to finish something. You know, like, I'll use Martin as the example here. Like, as the fan at Worldcon was very eager to say, he is getting up there in age, and I don't mean that disrespectfully by any means, but I think that's something that's been on a
The fruits of his labor. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. It's not a bad mindset. Well, Mandy mentioned influencers, and I think it's really hard nowadays. I mentioned this earlier on too, that authors have become their own kind of influencer, or these big personalities in their own right. So I think everyone is owed, even if you are in the public sphere, a certain level of privacy, right? And in that regard, you don't owe anyone anything in terms of like, here's what's going on in my personal life, which is why it's hard to write, et cetera, et cetera. I think where I have like my hardest line, which is not even that hard of a line, is that if you are selling me something, then now this kind of becomes transactional. And so, yes, take as long as you need, right? I think that's totally fair. I mean, some of the best took forever to write their stuff, and I'm taking forever to write mine. So I understand that, like, yeah, good things take time. I would rather have a phenomenal book that took 20 years to write, that is some of the best work you have ever done, than have an ass trash book that I'm like, what? Why did you write this so quickly? So, but I do think at a certain point, if you are putting your work out there, you are willing to take on a certain level of criticism. And also, I think, I don't know, I think authors tend to shy away from admitting that they like enjoy the fandom that they've created, or that they're like thankful. I know they say they're thankful for their fans, but like, a certain level of your success comes from the people who are very into your work. And so I think it is important to not have your work dictated by the fans, but to just realize that there are people out there who do really want your work, and that I think it's important to finish. Again, if you don't want to finish, I do understand. I think there are so many other ways to go about it. You can pass it off. I think Terry Pratchett's stuff, when he passed away, got finished by a few different authors, or if not another author. And, there are ways to go about it. But yeah, I think there is a certain level of commitment you have to have as an author, and to know that people are looking forward to your work and are expecting it, especially if they have put money into purchasing your stuff, or things like that. So it's a mixed bag, really. But influencers tend to get upset when they get called out for stuff, and it's like, but you put your life out there, and so it's like, yeah, you have to be willing to receive that sort of criticism, in the same way that I'm sure Martin never expected to have the world-renowned fame, or maybe he did. But with that comes a certain level of responsibility in my mind, as like any public figure does. It's doesn't mean that you can't make mistakes, and you can't stumble, and you can't take your time, but there is a relationship there, right? You have a group of people waiting for the art that you have said that you are going to produce. It'd be different if he were like, or authors go, "Hey, I don't know when it's going to be done. I'm going to try and work my best on it, but there's no publication date," you know? I don't know if Martin has done this, but like with Rothfuss, it's like it keeps getting extended, and that's when I have a problem, because I'm like, you're not fulfilling your promise. You're not saying what you're actually doing. You know what I mean? If that makes any sense. So yeah, you know, Mandy says we are not social creatures and we now have to have platforms. That's true too. Like, and some authors tend to stay super remote and disconnected from social media and then only go to these fan events, which I'm sure there's been awkward situations before, but I think, yeah, that's a fine line between social media and not. And it's just, again, I don't think they owe anyone anything, but I think they have a responsibility, if that distinction can be made. So that's how I feel about it. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And there's no playbook. There's no like, oh, this is how you should act if you have a platform and you enjoy being on social media. Like, one of the best books I read this year, she's nowhere to be found on the internet. Because I wanted to follow her. I wanted to be, like, at her or whatever. Nowhere to be found. There are interviews, but that's about it. She has no social media presence that the public knows of. And I really admire that. Because I'm just like, yeah, if you don't want a platform, you technically don't have to have one. But in the same way that Mandy says that buyers sometimes have unreasonable expectations, Audra Winters, they didn't even read the synopsis but bought and now want a refund. To me, that's just like capitalism coming with an axe to your art. You know, you're like, you must be great. You must hit all expectations. And it's just like, yeah, it's just not realistic. So it's I think it's balancing on kind of a knife's edge of like understanding your own agency as an artist and being like, no, here's the line. Here's the boundary. Please don't cross. While also being like, I'm putting my work out there. And so there are going to be expectations that I need to deliver eventually on my promise to the people that I have, you know, that I've wanted in my circle, right? Like I want fans. I want people to enjoy my work. I want to have that kind of interaction and be like, oh, I loved it. This is why I loved it. You know, it really made me feel all these things. But yeah, also privacy. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Again, you mentioned honesty, and I think that's like a great, like, that's where the line is. It's just being honest. And I think Martin has been honest, but also I think people get way too far-fetched with their like, well, he's like doing all this other stuff. It's like, yeah, he also has to make a living because I'm sure he's not getting paid while he's writing this book because the contract says whatever, you know? So it's like, you know, yeah, it's, yeah, he, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's complicated. Lay down. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it truly, genuinely, I'll still go back to what I said earlier, where it's just like, I would rather wait, and I might be annoyed, and I think I have the right to be annoyed if it's going to take more than half of my adult life for this to come out. But like, you know, I would rather have an amazing product that the author is also extremely proud of putting out versus this, like, you know, almost Sarah J. massification of like people just spitting out books because fandom wants it, you know. And I think, yeah, it goes back to no one's going to be pleased. You know, not everyone's going to be pleased. So it's like, who are you doing this for? You know, and again, yep, your readers are a big part of it. You wouldn't be here without them, honestly, if it wasn't as good as it was, right? Like, they are part of the reason why things get so popular and get turned into films and movies and TV shows. So yeah, it's just like, anyway, I could ramble about this forever, but I'll stop. I love it. Love it. It wasn't a banned book. It was just funny that you put that as your resource because I wasn't able to today, but I got the notification that I have a book on hold that's ready for pickup. So I was like, oh, that's so funny that that's your resource. I've really been trying to utilize my public library more. And, you know, I was trying to be like, oh, let me read some more like medieval stuff because that's kind of where I want to like have more influence in my book with like more realistic kind of knowledge, I guess. And I like looked up some of the best like medieval history books to read for people. And I was like, they probably won't even have this. And they had every single one that I was interested in. So it just took a couple weeks for them to get, not even a couple weeks. It took a week, I think, for all of them to show up in my library. And yeah, I'm stoked. And they allow like 3 or 4 auto renewals, unless it's something on hold. And even if it's not in your library, you can totally request it. So yeah, and if you don't care about your library, like library books, you should still go get a library card because those numbers really help their extremely limited funding now. So yeah. Yeah. Please don't. PBS is too pure. I am not pure enough. I cannot be. Yes. Let us know. Yeah. Thanks for dealing with the chaos in today's episode. It really was lots of hiccups today, but we appreciate you listening as always, and we're loving the growth of interaction we've had. And so yeah, please keep it coming, even if it's gentle criticism. We will have no haters. No, just kidding. But no, I love it. I'm really excited for the next kind of year of Quill and Query. I realize that we will be celebrating our like second year end of the year recap come December. It'll be like our second one, which is crazy. It's awesome. But yeah, anyway, that's it. That's all I have to say. Go ahead. I know, it's pretty great. I'm stoked. I'm excited for our interviews. So yeah, if anyone's like tired of us talking, we have many interviews coming and slated to come, so you don't have to listen to us drone on and on and on. And thanks, Mandy, for chatting with us today. It's always nice to have someone else to chat with while we're talking. All right. Yep. Go rest. No stress. Go rest. That's right. Yeah, I feel you. All right, y'all. Thanks again. Talk to you later. Bye.